Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
All right, parents in the audience, as you watch the Olympics, are you motivated to try to raise the next Usain Bolt or Misty May Trainer? Or are you just trying to raise the next Bill Gates or Meg Whitman? Are those two goals mutually exclusive? In other words, how do you strike a balance between sports and academics in the way you raise your kids? Maybe you saw the Times article today on how this plays out in Chinese-American families. Some think sports are a distraction, frivolous games that take time away from academics and other more important pursuits. But to some, sports teaches lessons that you don't get anywhere else, team building and competitiveness, and they see phys ed as part of a well-rounded life, even a status thing. So joining us to discuss all this is Gordon Marino. He's a professor of philosophy at St. Olaf's College in Minnesota. He's also the boxing writer for the Wall Street Journal. He played Division I football and was the football coach at both Yale and St. Olaf's. So, Gordon Marino, welcome to WNYC. Thanks for doing this with us.
Thanks for having me on. I'm really excited about this. It's great.
What do you think about this question? Why is it that certain families or certain cultures prioritize sports and others look down their noses at them?
Well, I mean, that's something that happened in America as well. There were a lot of people who thought that kids should be out working and not playing sports, that sports were frivolous. So there's a history of that in this country as well. But also, I think it's important to keep in mind that part of the function of sports is also play. It's not just education. And some of the debate about that, people talk about, what do you get out of sports? How can you transfer it into other things? And miss the element of the importance of play in life.
So people call us up. How about for you when you were a kid or parents trying to figure out why your kids or maybe why your husband are so obsessed with youth sports and trying to figure out the place it really has and should have in your own family? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. You've said that even within early American culture, sports were seen as a waste of time. The kids should be working, right?
Well, also in the debates about in the late, I think it was the 1890s or so, when sports started to take off in America, especially with football, there was a lot of religious concern among religious people that it was frivolous.
And the issue—it's related to the issue with first-generation Chinese-American families, as the Times wrote it up. They're so focused on seeing their kids escape the restaurant or the sweatshop that it seems sports will drag them down. More middle-class families see it as a sign of achievement. You think that's a common immigrant pattern?
Well, I also think today that sports has become a real vehicle of upward mobility. It's been connected with college admissions and all kinds of things like that. So I think that is a real pattern there.
I guess, although only for a select few, right? I mean, that's considered fool's gold to a lot of folks. They see the college scholarships or whatever, but only a handful ever get it.
That's true, but not everyone truly understands that, and they think their child is going to be that one person. But also there's a sense that it'll improve your chances at college admissions. And articles in the Times by Bill Pennington have suggested that that's in fact the case to some degree.
You also mentioned that one thing sports teaches you is the ability to have respect for someone who's out to get you. Want to talk about that?
No, I didn't say so for someone who's out to get you. It's more of a situation of it teaches you to respect the person who's going for the same thing that you are, right?
Out to get you in the sense of being your competitor.
Right. You're both going for the same thing, and you have and sports teaches you to develop a sense of respect and even affection for that person. Like, and that's what you see with good sportsmanship. Persons, two people might be going for the gold medal, and one person wins, and the other person feels affection for that person. And that's something. That's a lesson in life that you seldom. You don't get practice of that kind of experience very much in life.
I guess it's sort of an abstraction for that, right? When somebody's going against you in your business life or for that lover who you're interested in, it's more meaningful in a way than the person going out for shortstop against you. But in a way, sports is an abstract pursuit that prepares you for those other things that really might have deeper emotional meaning.
That's right. In other areas of life, no one encourages you to to be kind or feel affection for the person who takes the job you're going for.
Right.
And so I think that's in dealing with envy and a sense of competition is a very powerful element in life. And also, sports. Aristotle taught us that one of the things that decides what kind of people we're going to be is how we deal with very powerful emotions like fear and aggression. And kids don't get a lot of practice of those emotions today. It's very protective societies. Remember the debates about dodgeball, even, right?
Right.
And sports gives you a lot of practice of those emotions, how to deal with them, how to control them, how not to be panicked by a sense of fear. And in that sense, can be very helpful, too.
Jordan in Gloucester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jordan. Thanks for calling in. Jordan, do we have you? Let's see if we can press the magic button and get Jordan on the phone.
Okay.
Let's see if we can try someone else. How about Mark on the New Jersey Turnpike? Mark, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi.
I just wanted to kind of elaborate further relative to the qualities that children develop when they play sports and how they can be transferred into life. I grew up playing sports a great deal, junior varsity, and some of the things that I learned and I was able to transfer in my adult life was the ability to deal with failure, teamwork, perseverance, and also application, you know, having to sit outside and shoot hoops for hours on end so I could keep the elbow in when I shoot my free throws. And I think that, you know, if it weren't for sports, I never would have been able to go on to finish college and have a good career in my adult life. So I think sports do more than just, find an outlet for children. It's a wonderful, wonderful conduit for the development of kids into adulthood.
Thank you very much.
That's an excellent point.
Well, go ahead.
That's an excellent point. No, I mean, learning to deal with it, to recognize the relationship between practice and excellence, what true excellence is, learn to be able to tolerate criticism constructively, and again, as you said, to learn to be able to deal with defeat. That's very right on the point.
Well put. So when you think of it a certain way, and the other caller who we couldn't get on the line, who I guess hung up, was going to make the draw an analogy between sports and arts education. In some of these ways that also, you know, don't have any direct practical application, but prepare you for life in various ways. But I don't know. When you think of it a certain way, sports are a totally trivial pursuit in a way that art, the creation of beauty or the reflection of culture, is not. I mean, who cares if you can swim faster or run faster or put a ball in a hoop when you could be spending your elective time understanding another culture or doing volunteer work or whatever you want to say? Does putting a ball in a net or in the end zone have any intrinsic meaning at all?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by intrinsic meaning, but there's a certain beauty to sports. So to ignore its aesthetic qualities and people watching the Olympics I think there are some strong parallels between art and sport in that sense. There's an aesthetic quality to it. But you make a really good point here about, say, volunteer work, because I think one of the liabilities of sport is intense concentration on sports can create a certain kind of narcissism. I mean, most of the people who are involved in sports, you know, get very seriously involved, and this is true of myself. I'm embarrassed about it when I was a kid. That aren't involved politically or aren't involved in other things. They're very much focused on, you know, their game. And that can create a kind of narcissism. And people on the one hand talk about the purpose-driven life, about getting outside yourself, which is one of the biggest and most important lessons in life. And sports can impede that sometimes. Sure, you might be able to contribute to the team, but do you think about the wider society at all? And I think it's really important for parents who are very intensely coaching their children to make sure that they're not becoming that they don't get isolated in that sense. That they do get involved in other things besides sports, and I think that's really critical.
That's a really great point. I'm glad you said it. Syed in Levittown, you're on WNYC. Hi, Syed.
Hi. Hello, Brian. How are you?
I'm good.
Hello?
How are you?
Yes. We immigrated from Pakistan 6 years ago. My brother and my cousin, both of them, goes to high school, and they're really good athletes and really good students and always make the honor roll. But still, my parents and my cousin's parents, my uncle, he always has the problem as saying that, oh, no, they're not devoting enough time for the studies. They should be focusing on the studies more, academics, and even though they always get the award being best student and athlete at the same time. So, I just want to ask, like, is there, I don't understand what is the thing that our parents, you know, they're reluctant to, you know, for my brother in this thing, and for my cousin, not letting them come outside and play. He's a really good basketball player. My brother is a good baseball player. And, you know, if they get a scholarship, if they get it, that's okay. My dad said, no, just focus on studies so much, and academics is the key, and it's the essence for everything, rather than being, you know, excelling in a sport. But I'm telling him they're doing good in both of those things, and let them do it. But I want to understand what's the reason for that, you know.
Gordon, it's an archetypal story. Syed speaks for millions of people from immigrant families and not.
Thanks. Yeah, I see what you're saying, and that's the issue we're talking about here, is this balance. But it could be that in your parents' generation or from their culture, that sports was never seen as a vehicle of as something that would bring you success in society. I mean, as you said, they think academics is the essence, and so sports is just, yes, as far as they're concerned, sports is not going to really get you anywhere in the end.
Now,
that's
Syed,
what their concern is, you know?
Syed, hang on a second, because George in White Plains might have something you want to tell your parents. George, are you there? Okay, let's see. I'm sorry, this is a problem with our phone system, so I think I have to click this and then click that. And George, do we have you now? No, we don't. Okay, so I'm sorry. Forgive me, folks. This is still one of the bugs we're working out here in our new space that you generously supported earlier in the week, but we still got to get our... too bad. Well, George was going to say when... we lost George, but George was going to say when he was in school and he stopped playing sports, his grades went down. So, Syed, tell that to your parents.
Well, not only that, that's a good point, because there's been a number of studies that show that when athletes are in their season, their grades are actually better. They organize their time better, and it's kind of quite counterintuitive, because you would think they have less time, but I'm talking about college students, and they actually do better when they're involved in sports.
Let's take another call. Is it Tavalny in Brooklyn? Tavalny, do I have your name right? Tavaini? Okay. Is that line on? Do you know if we have her line? Is she just not hearing me? Okay. Well, we'll try that again as we continue to work out the kinks in the phones. You wrote an article on Huffington Post, I think I'm looking at it here, on Brett Favre. Now, of course, Brett Favre, you're in Minnesota. I'm in New York, where Brett Favre is the obsession du jour.
Right.
A lot more people here are talking about Brett Favre than even Michael Phelps, I think,
now
that he's a Jet. And what was the point you were making about Favre and coming out of retirement?
Just that there's a kind of friendship between males in sports that we don't experience outside of sports, that once sports are over, there's never anything like that again. And it's very, very powerful in people who retire. So, for example, I mentioned Mickey Mantle in there. I said, you know, the thing they missed the most was the camaraderie, the friendship. How often do you see guys in their 30s jumping around, hugging one another with their eyes wide and screaming, that kind of jubilation? And it's very, very powerful and hard to give up. It's a lonely world after sports when you've been together like that with people.
Let's see. I think we have George in White Plains back with us. George, you there? No, George went right on and right off. All right, let's see. How about you want to try Dale in the Bronx over here? You want to put up line six? Dale, you there? All right. Gordon, you're a philosophy professor now.
Yes.
And the director of the Kierkegaard Library at St. Olaf College.
That's
so
correct.
It's almost incongruous to say that you do these things now and you used to be a boxer.
Right.
Tell us about boxing and how you went from boxing to philosophy.
Well, that's quite a long story, but in philosophy there's quite a bit of aggression expressed, believe me. And
just in the philosophy department academic bureaucracy?
Excuse me?
Is that aggression in philosophy itself, or is that aggression in the philosophy department for tenure?
No, I didn't mean in my philosophy department. I mean in the field itself. You're always questioning one another and trying to find inconsistencies in each other's arguments. So instead of punching each other in the nose, you're trying to take out the other person's sense of intellectual identity. So it's a rather violent field in some way.
But boxing seems to hold boxing has almost disappeared as a major sport in the United States, partly because the public holds, partly because it was corrupt, and partly because the public holds the very notion of it in a place of revulsion.
Well, I have to disagree with you about it disappearing, but I think there's some...
As a major sport that people follow as fans.
Well, up until the 50s, it was the second most popular sport in America.
I know. Right, but who among our listeners could sit here now and tell you who the heavyweight champion of the world is?
That's right. That's exactly right. Yes, it has a. It's not as popular as it once was. That's for sure.
So, is that a function of cultural change to some degree?
Oh, I think so. Yeah. And a lot of that had to do with when boxing came on television. A lot of the local clubs closed down, and it wasn't as big a part of the community as it once was. But there's a lot of reasons for that. Insurance companies, all kinds of things. But my one son's a boxer. He lives in New York, and. I think it's a great sport, especially in terms of learning how to deal with those issues of fear and aggression. It's really wonderful like that. And so I think.
Then again, maybe our parents.
Excuse me.
Then again, maybe our parents' generation knew Sartre when they were growing up, and nobody today could name a worldwide philosopher.
That's right. That's true too.
Nick in Wilton, you're on WNYC. Can we get Nick up there? Nick, go
ahead. I loved sports growing up. I played them all the time, and I never thought I needed to rationalize playing the sport to say that it would better me in another aspect of life. Mm-hmm. And I think it's great. I mean, sure, it's great if you can get another benefit from playing sports other than having a good time, but I think the core in this country is we just need to start having fun. And there's nothing wrong with playing basketball if you're 40 and you stink at the sport. Who cares? As long as you're out there exercising and having a blast, I mean, what difference does it make if it makes you better in the office? I mean,
How about that, Gordon Marino? Why do we even need to have this coming?
I agree with you 100%, Nick. All the discussion about it is, you know, to what extent can it help you get ahead in life, blah, blah, blah. But people are just forgetting the whole element of play, which is just essential. And play is such an important part of human life. And I think you're right. I think that's absolutely right.
That would be a good place to end this conversation, except that I think we finally have George in White Plains, who our phone system has been snubbing repeatedly over the last 10 minutes. So let's give him his due. George? George? Oh, no.
Hello.
George, go ahead.
Yes.
Oh, George, you're there. Yay. And so, George, tell us your story. You have advice for Syed from Levittown.
Well, not really advice, but I just say my experience has been that throughout college and in high school, whenever I was injured and could not compete or even train, my grades plummeted. And, you know, the old Greek, strong body, strong mind, and what more important lesson could we learn than teamwork? You know, frankly, that's a big part of our trouble is guys don't work together. They're all competing against each other. And sports taught me to keep going for the other guy when I'd quit.
And did you tell our screener that your grades went down when you stopped playing sports?
Absolutely. Consistently.
Why? What's the connection?
Well, not just a mind or a body. It was the whole, my brain is fed by my bloodstream. And whenever I was competing, I just was more of a full person. And, I didn't analyze it. That was just my experience.
George, thanks a lot. And I think it's a great lesson for a lot of people. I appreciate your call. And before you go, Gordon Marino, what captivates you at these Olympics?
I've been writing on the boxing, so I'm clearly following. I was out in Colorado Springs with the team for a day, and so I'm clearly following those guys.
Did you see the runner appropriately named Bolt yesterday?
Unbelievable! That wasn't beautiful. That was a piece of artwork, wasn't it? I mean, that was just a lesson in grace. Unbelievable.
It really was a lesson in grace.
And isn't it strange that so ironic that they have the name Bolt? I mean, you think God was playing games? God was making jokes.
And runners aren't usually that tall. I guess they can't make their legs move that many times a minute. But
right. He's
got an incredible ability to do that, running alongside all these shorter people, but keeping up with them.
I know. They said he was running around 30 miles an hour. I mean, that's just remarkable.
Wow. All right. Gordon Marino, professor of philosophy and director of the Kierkegaard Library at the St. Olaf College in Minnesota. We're heading out your way in a week and a half for the Republican convention.
In the
state of 10,000 lakes. Thanks a lot for coming on with us. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks a lot for having me. I really appreciate it.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Here's another decision that you may have to make, or maybe your parents, whether to get or get you an HPV vaccine. And new science is casting a little bit of doubt on the necessity of it. Stay with us.